This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
You can visit the Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com, to find out more about our show. This is not the kind of show we do where we are talking about what happened on Tuesday, the mass murders in New York. But we generally do a show that's a lot funnier, I think, than this. And we've had to go into our news talk mode. Some of us click into this a little bit more easily than others. And for whatever reason, this is not a difficult thing for me to do in terms of the execution. Ordinarily, this kind of talk radio isn't something I'm a big fan of. But because of the extraordinary circumstances that surround us, you have to do it. You got to be informative, and I think getting opinion, all kinds of opinion, is necessary and interesting in this case. Now, there was a CNN poll, and the question was, for how long would you be willing to support U.S. military action against terrorism? A few months, 6 months to a year, as long as it takes, I don't support military action. The response was, a few months, 6%. 6 months to a year, 5%. I don't support military action, 15%. As long as it takes, 74%. So everybody is in the frame of mind. How long that's going to last, we got to take a look at. The other thing, as I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, is the effect culturally of all of these events, the mass murder in New York and Washington, and the possibility of war. And there are songs. Now, there was a rumor that the company that I work for had come up with a list of songs that they did not want played on their radio stations, and it turned out to be false. It was a rumor and a rumor only. It was never backed up factually. So I don't know who these companies are. The article that I'm reading from the Los Angeles Times mentions Citadel Communications, Clear Channel, and some other radio companies, but they listed this. There was a list, supposedly, of songs that are not to be played on the radio in America, and they include Steve Miller's Jet Airliner, Queen's Another One Bites the Dust, Pat Benatar, Hit Me With Your Best Shot, The Bangles' Walk Like an Egyptian, Kansas' Dust in the Wind, Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven, The Beatles' A Day in the Life, Nine Inch Nails' Head Like a Hole, Bob Dylan's Knockin' on Heaven's Door, Megadeth's Sweating Bullets, Metallica's Seek and Destroy, Jerry Lee Lewis's Great Balls of Fire, Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World, Peter, Paul, and Mary's Leaving on a Jet Plane, Black Sabbath's Suicide Solution. Here's one I don't get. Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water. That seems like a fairly benign song about sort of creating a peaceful environment, but they don't want that. According to this article, the eminent Los Angeles Times got it wrong. Anyway, this is the list that they say was circulated by the company that I work for, songs that are not to be allowed on the radio. Third Eye Blind, Jumper, Alice in Chains, Down in a Hole, The Hollies, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother, Don McLean's American Pie, Frank Sinatra's New York, New York, Bruce Springsteen's I'm on Fire, which is a song about passion for a woman from afar. Ricky Nelson's Traveling Man. Ricky Nelson's Traveling Man. Well, I'm traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl. What's wrong with that? Anything having to do with travel? Just don't travel. I don't even want to hear about traveling. How about City of New Orleans, that train song by Arlo Guthrie? No, you can't play that either. It's a train song. Forget it. James Taylor, Fire and Rain, and Limp Bizkit's Break Stuff. Most of those, I understand, were there a prohibition against playing them. Walk Like an Egyptian's a little strange, but there you go. That's what's going on in the world of radio today, or not going on, depending upon who knows what. And I can tell you right now that list, that's bogus. Nobody at any radio station that is associated with a company that I work for ever got a list like that. So let's see who wrote the article. Los Angeles Times. Article written by Jeff Leeds and Paul Brownfield. You guys got it wrong. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Rodrigo, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Yes, sir. Fine. Thank you.
Good. Phil, I just have 2 points I want to make. First, first one. A little while back, about 45 minutes ago, you had a call when you were talking about the Iraqis no-fly zone that the UN resolution said allowed us to do it.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to let you know that that was not part of the UN resolution. And we installed the no-fly zone over Iraq. It was just something between the U.S. and England that had nothing to do with the U.N. The U.N. does not support a no-fly zone over
Iraq.
Well,
it was a military tactic then.
Yes, it was.
The United Nations did not support the
no-fly zone over Iraq.
Okay, the United Nations authorized the use of force by a coalition of nations. The United Nations does not delineate or articulate exactly what that military tactic and strategy is going to be. The United States and certain coalition partners, as a military tactic to make sure that there were no planes in the air to jeopardize coalition planes, decided on a no-fly zone. So you're right. There wasn't anything expressly written in a UN resolution.
Yeah, and
it was part of the military
tactic.
The
second point that I want to make is about 9-10 years ago, I'm originally from Brazil, okay? About 9-10 years ago, I had a summer exchange program. I spent 2 months in Pakistan, okay? And the reason why I'm saying this is because this woman called about a few minutes ago talking about if we give money, somebody's going to come up with, you know, telling us where Osama bin Laden is. And I just want to let you know that, you know, I wasn't in Pakistan, I wasn't in Afghanistan. And just to let you know, those people who are extremist fundamentalists of Muslims, they don't care about money. And it doesn't matter if you give them you give them the whole amount, all the money in the world wouldn't give them, you know, let them know. They wouldn't tell you where Osama bin Laden is. That's my point I'm trying to make.
Well,
it doesn't matter how much money they
get,
how much money we give them, they're not going to say it.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I disagree. Not every one of them. You know, when you look at a group of people, they're not all of equal philosophical and rhetorical strength. There are varying degrees of commitment in any group of people. Already, the material witnesses that the FBI has in custody, already these so-called committed members of these cells have been sweated down enough to give some fairly valuable information already, just days after this event has happened.
We also got
information prior to the millennium from a variety of so-called committed fundamentalists on a potential attack on Los Angeles International Airport by terrorists. We were able to supersede that. I hear what you're saying. I think it's a romantic notion that these hardcore fundamentalists can't be bought. I don't think it's entirely realistic. I think that there's groups of them. For instance, let me give an example. Not all of these fundamentalists are back the Taliban. Some of them are in favor of the National Alliance. They're all fundamentalists. They're all hardcore. But some of them don't like the Taliban. These individuals may be able to be compromised. And I just mentioned to you that as of July of this year, the Taliban had said it wanted to be friends with the United States. Now, why do you suppose they want to be friends with the United States?
They just want to get the benefits that everybody else
wants.
Oh,
well, you see, maybe they do want a little of that juice. Maybe they do. And if they want a little of that juice, and if they want a little of that, some of the good stuff, then maybe they'll just hand over that bin Laden if they can get military support. Right now, they have a very tenuous grip on their country. The country's in the midst of a civil war. They don't have a lot of control of that nation. And they probably fear that by turning over bin Laden, it'll eventually topple them. But if the United States might be able to give them enough in terms of military support, economic support, or whatever they need, maybe they can extend their grip on that country, all for the price of one guy. Frankly, I don't like these guys don't sound like very nice people, but I guess we can deal with them somewhere down the road. Right now, we want this man bin Laden. We want his network taken out of that country. And I would say, and if call me stupid, call me naive, I would say that if these guys made overtures as of July that they would like to be more friendly with the United States, if we grease them enough, maybe they'll hand this guy over. Maybe not. Maybe not. We've already gotten certain concessions from the Pakistanis, who are supposedly their good buddies there, the Taliban's. And already they've said we can use their airspace, they've closed their border, we might be able to use their country for the use of ground troops. I think it's a romantic notion, Rodrigo, that these fundamentalists are all just so down with the program that they just turn their heads away from a dollar bill.
Well, that's fine. That's just, you know, what my personal point of view from, you know, being close to people who were like that. I just one more thing. You know, I just think that, you know, the U.S. should get prepared to infiltrate other countries, not only Afghanistan, because there are terrorist groups all around. And if you concentrate on Afghanistan, it might even open doors to other groups to infiltrate this country, since we're not looking at them. So I don't think it's a war only with Afghanistan and the Taliban, you know, per se.
We should go around
and go everywhere. It's something that'll take forever. It's not going to be a short-term thing like most Americans want to. It's going to take a long time.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
over a period of a long time, you know, as well as I do, since you're American, you know, the amount of support that this government gets decreases by the minute.
Maybe. Maybe not. We put 5 years into an effort to rid Europe and Asia of this militaristic nationalism. 5 years, I don't know how many thousands of lives. We put a good 10 years into a ill-thought and eventually wrongly, you know, conducted war in Vietnam. I don't know. I right now I can tell you this. President Bush has said this isn't going to be any television war. So you can kiss that one goodbye. And all of the media lining up, and God bless all you guys. I work in the media. I'm not a guy that I don't bash the media. I happen to know how hard they work. But it ain't going to be, you guys aren't going to be going in with the troops, so forget it. The president has said he is not going to compromise the lives of people in uniform just so somebody can get a scoop on CNN or Fox and tell us which units are going where. And the next thing you know, we got a few thousand dead people on hand because somebody sitting at home wanted to see the smart bombs flying. Kiss that one goodbye. I support him 8,000,000% on that one. I get so personally tired of seeing every tiny little detail debated the next day, either on talk radio or on the streets. Well, do you really think that OJ with the glove and everything, and nobody that knows anything about the, you know, the legal system, nobody knows anything about law, and the next thing you know, we're all experts, and we're weighing in on it, and some of it gets pretty vociferous, wrong-minded, and we're influencing the opinions of our elected officials because, well, geez, they're telling me what to do. Well, they're a bunch of dumbasses. Well, I got to do what they're doing. Otherwise, I won't get elected next fall. Same thing with this stuff. We don't have to know it all right now. Oh, and one other thing. You don't have the right to know it all right now. You got the right to vote guys into office. We have the right to have a commander-in-chief who is civilian elected, who is in control of the armed forces. That is constitutionally mandated. The commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces is a civilian. That's what makes our country different from most other countries. That's what makes us different from Paraguay and Argentina, all these other freaking guys walking around on airport runways with those goofy-looking hats. Where do those guys get half their uniforms anyway? These military dictatorships. Our commander-in-chief is a civilian, and a lot of times it bugs Americans. What does this guy know about it? He never served. And that's that guy know about it. He never served. There's plenty of presidents that never served, okay? But they're commander-in-chiefs. Lincoln. You know who that guy was, right? He never served a day in the military. All he did was save the country. So we don't have to know it all right now. And the president has said we ain't going to know it all right now, and that's fine with me. It's going to be a war that will not be tipping its hand, at least as far as the United States is concerned. We're not going to tip our hand to anybody. And if you think it's going to be the Gulf War all over again, forget it. Because it's going to last longer, and there's going to be a few more people going to die, unfortunately. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to the distinctly different Phil Hendry show over the last week as we talk about the events, the mass murder in New York and in Washington of American citizens on our home soil by elements, psychopaths of foreign interest. And we talk about what we're going to do about it and give you the latest news on it. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
You know what really pissed me off? Like, the day after this horror was inflicted upon the people of New York and this country, I heard a very prominent talk show host, national host, say he was baiting some member of the Democratic Party on the air. That's not because I'm a Democrat. It's got nothing to do with it. It was some very unfunny, almost hysterically delivered baiting, mocking, and taunting of some individual in Washington on Capitol Hill, I guess, who had, I don't know, made some statement or done something and now was proved wrong by the guy. And within 24 hours, to prove a point about how right he was, he used the occasion of this horror to bait and taunt this individual. I got mad. And frankly, I can't tell you who it is. Because I like my job. Afghanistan. It's an extremely poor, landlocked country, highly dependent on farming and livestock raising. Economic considerations have played second fiddle to political and military upheaval. During the 10-year Soviet military occupation, one-third of the population fled the country, with Pakistan and Iran sheltering a combined peak of 6 million people. In 99, 1.2 million Afghan refugees remained in Pakistan and about 1.4 in Iran. Gross domestic product has fallen substantially. The majority of the population continues to suffer from insufficient food, clothing, housing, and medical care. Inflation is a serious problem. International aid can deal with only a fraction of the humanitarian problem. This is a country you want to bomb, huh? I would hope that what happened to us in New York a week ago would disabuse us of the notion of just go in and bomb them. All right, 1-800-449-8686 on the Phil Hendry Show. Rebecca, hi. Welcome to the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, God bless America. Phil, I wanted to say that I do agree with you. We do not need to know everything right now. The media is way too nosy. I do believe it's our greatest asset, but at the same time, it is our greatest downfall.
The media is our greatest downfall?
Yeah.
Wow. Our greatest downfall, really?
It really is.
In what way would you say? You know, I don't disagree with you. I made the statement like 2 days before this happened. I said CNN's the worst thing that's happened in the last 20 years. I did.
I agree.
Now all I do is watch CNN.
I'm just as guilty as you are. During the attacks, for instance, we did not know if they were going to stop. And the media was giving away the president's location.
Yeah.
During the attacks.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, that is the stupidest thing. Common sense would tell you, are we as Americans trying to protect the president? Or are we do we have so much pride that we have to know everything and we have the right to know everything that we're willing to risk the man who is out there trying to save our lives?
It's kind of like, it's literally like this, Rebecca. It's like, remember when all those Cabbage Patch dolls, everybody had to have one?
Yes, I do.
And your daughter or your son says to you, Mom, Dad, I want a Cabbage Patch doll. I'm not going to be a part of a mob. I will not go down to that store. I'm not going to be a part of it. And the next thing you know, you're standing in line with everybody else trying to get a Cabbage Patch doll.
Yeah.
The media feeding frenzy is the same way. People's jobs depend upon how quickly they can get information on the air or into print, because that is the competitive nature of that business. If ABC scoops NBC by a second, they think it's a huge victory. And they touted. I can't tell you. I don't know who scoops who. If they didn't tell me, I wouldn't know. Would you know? It's like, we had the information first. Well, whatever, man. I got it from somebody.
They all say they have the information first.
Exactly.
All of them.
And so they like to remain above the fray, but then the minute that... And what you said is true. There's President Bush's plane landing in Nebraska at the Strategic Air Command headquarters, and there's a local Omaha television station with a camera right on Air Force One as it's landing. Way to go, guys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the president said it very clearly, and I think very well. He said, I'm not going to risk the lives of people in uniform just so you guys can get the big scoop. Forget it. Ain't going to happen.
Right. And I do have to say, this is a little bit of a change of the subject, but the president's wanted dead or alive was, to me, just great. Go for it.
But he didn't say that. Actually, what he said was, when I was a kid, I used to see these posters on the Old West shows, wanted dead or alive. Well, all the American people want is for this guy to come to justice. So
right.
they didn't complete the sentence, which had to do with bringing him to justice, not really wanted dead or alive.
Right.
So that's
it was a silent notation.
Right. Well, that's what I get for watching the media, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Bye. Oh, our food is here. Renee, come on in. Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I had something I was going to say. I totally forgot. Oh, I've noticed the last, like, 24 hours or so, the caller volume dropping off. This is something, by the way, that a lot of talk show hosts will never talk about, you know, their caller volume dropping off. I've seen guys sitting in a studio with absolutely no calls on the board going, you can still get through. We have a line open. You got like 10 lines open, pal. Anyway, I've noticed the caller volume dropping off a little bit because since last Tuesday, from the grief to the anger to the sort of the intellectualizing of the problem, people are running out of things to talk about, you know, and maybe that's not it. Maybe it's gone beyond the emotional response and the emotional feelings. I realize that's redundant. The emotionalism to the analytical aspect of a problem, and that's when, you know, it gets kind of dull. But that's cool, because I like talking about this stuff. This is interesting to me. And so long as we have the opportunity, we will. And when we go back to the normal kind of radio show that we do, which is essentially a comedy show, we'll do that. When? I don't know. Last night, David Letterman tried it. He didn't try to do comedy. I shouldn't say that. But David came on the air and did a show that was very heartfelt and I thought very compelling. But it isn't the David Letterman show. And he's going to work his way back into it as best he can, as we're going to do ourselves. By the way, Afghanistan was by far the largest producer of opium poppies in 1999, and narcotics trafficking is a major source of revenue. In other words, it's a toilet. It's a toilet. Taliban, Islamic fundamental. I don't get it. These guys are making their money off of heroin. Okay. That's fine. I mean, I got, you know, the way a man makes a living is no concern of mine, but when the guy's running around the world claiming he's one thing and he's doing something else, and oh yeah, he's giving money or support or aid or comfort or caring or soft stroking bedtime stories to some guy that just took a big crap on us, I might have a couple of things to say about it. Here is Bob on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Phil. How you doing? Hey,
fine, thanks.
I enjoy the humor of your regular show, but also appreciate the orientation and your opinions over the past week.
Thank you.
I guess I wanted to make just one comment and maybe get some feedback from you, too. I really enjoy the analysis of this as well, and I guess as I've watched it, there's a couple things that really piqued my interest. And number one is I don't see what is pending is a war, and I think there's going to be a lot of people that disagree with me, but I see it more as just a different type of fighting crime, tying into some of the comments you made earlier. You know, we've got this TV mentality, and myself included, love to watch it. Love to watch wars and see people, you know, draw a line across a map and say this is what we conquered today. But in reality, I guess I'm a little arrogant in believing we're just, you know, we can roll over Afghanistan, throw in Iran, Iraq, and you know, it's a couple of weeks.
But that's not who we're fighting.
No, exactly.
You know.
And the point is, we're not fighting them. The criminals, for all intents and purposes, were from within.
Yeah. And well, I shouldn't say that's not who we're fighting, because the President Bush said we're fighting the terrorists and the governments that aid and abet them. But I still don't think that means rolling over a country.
Well, but I'm saying we can, though. Once identified.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, look what happened to Russia. I mean, we just got done talking about the Soviet Union and the freaking nightmare they lived through for 10 years. I don't know if you were listening, Bob, because it was a couple of years ago. It was a couple of hours ago. It seems like 2 years ago. And Russian veterans of the Afghan war are weighing in and saying, here it is. The prospect of a U.S. attack on Afghanistan brings an ominous message from veterans of the Soviet Union's decade-long war with the Afghan guerrillas. You'll never win.
Yeah.
You can occupy, you can put troops there, and you can keep on bombing, but you can't win, said Lieutenant General Ruslan Ashev.
Yeah. When I say rollover, I guess I meant the same thing, that you know, we'll occupy it, we'll, with the support of Iran and Pakistan closing their borders, we can occupy and appear to have won what might be a battle, but what really worries me is this a battle or is this a war or is this a fighting a crime that we can defeat?
Well, I don't know what you want to call it, but there's going to be American casualties. There will be an effect on our limited effect on our freedoms. That all sounds like the measures that one institutes when and things that happen during a war to me.
Well, and my biggest fear, and to follow on with what you just said, is that I think it might affect our freedom.
No, it's not might. It will.
Well,
there's no might. It will.
No question. It
yeah.
will. But I'm afraid it's going to turn ourselves upon ourselves, turn us upon ourselves. And
well,
15
that's,
years ago.
That's completely negative thinking and panicky thinking on your part.
Well.
It's panic is what it is.
No, I've had
turn us on. How would it turn us on ourselves?
Well, I think that this, I mean, you look at the sense of nationalism that's set in with the country over the past week, and it came from the result of something really tragic, but there's also this, you know, here in our state, there's been a backlash upon some of the Muslims, and it's inevitable that this has given a shot of arm into other terrorist organizations, and you know what? The Taliban, or let's say the Islamic militants.
No, but the question was, the limiting of freedoms is going to turn us on ourselves. How pursue that?
Gonna,
pursue that line of thinking.
Well, we can assume it's not going to limit itself. Terrorist activities are not going to limit themselves to the Islamic terrorists. But you know, at any given time, there's right. The last I saw was 17 different terrorist organizations. That
right.
Have, even within this state.
Right, and we're at war with all of them.
And we're at war with all of them.
Right, and when you're at war, measures are taken.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know, and we
you
can
look like one, and I look like one, and my neighbor looks.
No,
like
No, you don't
one.
Look like one to me. I mean, it depends if you're carrying a bomb, or if you have a weapon you're trying to get on board an airplane, or if you're, you know, if there's certain evidence linking you to stuff, then you look like one to me. You know, then you're going to look like one to me. But and all of the science fiction fantasy writers, this is the first step toward a totalitarian. They still gradually strip your freedoms away. All the panicky, nervous, hysterical thinking that Americans in particular love to indulge in will be indulged in again. Yes, you see, we're being patted down going into restaurants. Why, I can't get on an airplane with less than 3 hours notice.
Yeah.
And all these other, and they're tapping my internet communications. These are all normal things that happen in a society when it's under attack. And this country, I trust, and maybe I'm stupid, but I don't think I am. I trust is doing the right thing, and I don't see this as the first step toward the nefarious black helicopter takeover of America. And that kind of panicky, hysterical, childlike thinking has no place right now in America, at the place and the time that we find ourselves. You know, 6 months ago, it's a lot of fun to call up Art Bell and engage in all of this fun chit-chat about black helicopters. Right now, it is panicky. It's hysterical. It is, it's almost bordering on traitorous for people
well,
to start talking.
Don't.
No, but I'm not talking about you, Bob.
No,
I'm not saying,
I don't believe in any of that.
No, I don't say that you do. Forgive me. I'm not saying that you do. I'm just saying I get really tired of listening to people, you know, with every little opportunity they get, they'll say, well, see, this is another instance of where the government's taking over. See, here's another instance. It's just paranoia is what it is.
Well, no, I'm just saying, and I don't believe in that stuff, but what I do believe in is we're fighting crime and not fighting a war. And the fact is, we were attacked here by people that were in the States. And the question, I guess,
well, call it what you want.
How will it, you know, nobody knows, but how will it affect our freedoms? And will it turn us upon ourselves? And not,
I don't
not,
get where
not
you're coming
from. Helicopters.
I don't know what you're talking about. Turn us upon ourselves. I don't get the. I've asked you to explain that.
No.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know, you look like the, you know, Rodrigo called a while ago. He had a Latin accent.
I got to assume that we've got brains in our heads and that we have a certain profile. And yes, there is such a thing as profiling a terrorist. It doesn't have to do with the color of his skin. That there's a certain profile that we're pursuing. There's certain steps that we'll take. But turning upon each other, as we've seen these brain-dead people do this past week on Arab Americans and Muslims,
yeah.
is un-American. But more to the point, it's ignorant. It's fairly typical of a certain educational level in this country and a certain kind of upbringing. People who do that, I mean, they almost tip their hand as to how well they were educated, what kinds of people brought them into this world, what their exact tuition and education was. I mean, it's just, forgive me, if you want to profile somebody, profile these people that are bashing Muslims and bashing Arab Americans because they look like, or Sikhs. Boy, there's a real genius move. You know what? These are your typical dumb rednecks. I'm sorry, but that's exactly what we're dealing with. We're dealing with insular, provincial-style Americans who get most of their patriotism from a quasi-mix of movies featuring these sort of pro-American points of view, most of the time produced by guys like Sylvester Stallone. They get their understanding of the world primarily from right-wing conservative talk shows. I'm sorry, I'm not singling out anybody, but they just do. They get their grasp of America from a kind of, I don't know, kind of a mixture of conversation around the feed bin and the gas station that they have with other friends of theirs, a cursory reading of the day's newspaper, and if they own a computer, and a lot of them do, a whole lot of chit-chat on message boards and chat rooms, and a fear that was inbred in them, and when I say inbred, I mean this fear, this emotional fear that was inbred in them by parents who are equally paranoid and ignorant. Their education may not be all that extensive. I don't know. I don't think that they're particularly cosmopolitan people, but there's plenty of them living in cities. See, when I'm talking about redneck, I don't mean some guy chewing a straw hay out near the barn someplace. I live in Los Angeles, Los Angeles, California. I bet you think that's full of movie stars. We got more rednecks out here per capita than any burg in Mississippi. We got some hicks and hayseeds out here. Oh, man. It's that they don't ride horses. They're not a. They're a kind of a paranoid, hysterically thinking, mistrustful person. Most of them are older. Most of them are in their 40s and 50s. Most of them are white men. Most of them fear a removal of a kind of privilege and a kind of position that they had to a second tier, and that they're vacating the post for African Americans and Latin Americans. They're going to lose jobs to them. There's an inability to face their own failings. That's also, as I continue to profile the dumbass that targets Arab Americans, this is also an aspect of these people. They have an inability to face their own inadequacies. They blame others. So there's a kind of a sociopathic thing at work. And I think the age thing is significant because a lot of them see their lives coming to an end. These are mostly white men who are in their 40s and 50s who feel mortality creeping up on them. And let me tell you something, because I'm there myself. When you start to feel mortality breathing its hot breath on your neck, you do want to kind of pick up a sign and write, "The end is near," and parade it up in front of people. You want to know why? Because the end's near for you. That's why. It got nothing to do with anybody else. I look at some dumbass standing outside with a bullhorn in the sign. "The end is near." Yeah, looks like it's near for you, all right, Charlie. You can barely walk. Look at all the old, pruned-up old guys on TV talking about the end. They're all old men. Every generation has had its paranoid, hysterical people. And these people that have, and thank God that there's not a lot of them. I thought it was really, really cool before Y2K. There wasn't long lines going out the door. I mean, some areas of the country, but, you know, everybody kind of took it in stride. It was a beautiful thing to watch. And after this attack took place, after the murders in New York, there were incidences of price gouging on gasoline, but it was just pockets. It wasn't widespread, and most Americans, sensible enough, saw it and said, "Well, Jesus, I don't want any part of this." I mean, you'd think just self-respect alone, you wouldn't want any part of it. So there, that's my profile of the typical kind of person that targets Arab Americans and Muslims, because they just don't have the tools to get with what's really going on, intellectual, physical, or otherwise. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-795-8686.
Of all the stories that I've heard since all this happened, the toughest ones for me to listen to are the stories surrounding the fate of the people on Flight 93, the group of passengers who overpowered the hijackers, causing the craft to crash in western Pennsylvania, the wife of Todd Beamer, who was one of the passengers, was interviewed on CNN, and she said that he was on the line with a 911 operator and made an agreement with the other passengers. I don't know how many others partook in this attempted retaking of the flight, but he basically said, we're going to go after the guy with the bomb. A hijacker who tried to make everybody on board believe that he had a bomb strapped to him. And the last thing the operator said was, let's roll. The last thing the operator heard him say, though, actually, was, let's roll. And off they went, and the operator didn't hear anything. She heard commotion, she heard scuffling, but didn't hear anything. And then the next thing we know, that plane went down. And effecting or aborting the attempt by those hijackers to crash that plane into the White House or into the Capitol building, countless more lives were saved that morning. At least in those instances than might have been. And maybe if you're to listen to and believe some of the people that talk these days, not a lot of them, but for instance, the emails that I get at home from various people, maybe what the people on Flight 93 should have done is sat down with the hijackers and asked them what they wanted and find out what their demands were and talked, over a cup of coffee, had a cup of tea, and had a nice chit-chat with them while the plane sailed right into the Capitol building. You see, that might have helped, huh? Oh, you mean it wouldn't? Well, you're telling me it? That's what I'm hearing. These guys, lieutenants, soldiers in the Osama bin Laden army, I would assume are the same kinds of people Osama bin Laden is. I'm sure they'd love to sit down and talk. So we could hear their demands, and maybe we can do something about it before they crash our asses into the ground in a ball of fire. Or maybe not, huh? You think you're going to... If you think you're going to have any luck talking with a guy like bin Laden and finding out what his problem is, you're going to have about as much luck with him as these people would have had with those hijackers had they not just said, enough is enough, we're probably going to die. That's what this man said to his wife and to the operator. But we've got to... We've got to take a stand. We've got to try something. Do we have time for a call before we lock it out? A real quick one? I don't know. Is there such a thing as a quick call on here, Mike? All right. I appreciate all of you guys calling today, and I will get more calls on tomorrow. I don't know what mode we're going to be in again. This is a different way of doing the Phil Hendry Show from the way we ordinarily do our show. Our show is... an entertainment-driven show. I'm an entertainer. I'm not a commentator per se. I mean, I gladly assumed the duties this past week. I hope that I'm saying things that aren't inflammatory. I hope I'm saying things that are sensible. They are my opinion, and they may be wrong, but I hope I'm not saying anything that would lead anybody to believe that I've got any intention in my heart other than what's good for you and for where we live, America. It's the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.